right now, joined by Kirk Bowles, Austin American Statesman. There's this game down in Austin. It is a doozy. It's a great early season non-conference game that sets it up for the winner and even the loser, if it's a tight game, is still in the mix. We're live at Richard Carr Motors on Imperial Drive off 340. We're here till 6 o'clock. Kirk, when was the last big game like this that you can truly remember this early in the year at DKR?
Well, I would say as far as the big game was when Notre Dame came to town. You know, and Charlie Strong was still the coach here, and that was the opener, and Texas won in overtime in 16. And I know some people thought Texas was back then, and that didn't quite hold up. So, you know, I've been calling it the biggest home game since Ohio State came in here in 06, the year after the Rose Bowl where Vince Young went crazy.
Kirk, after Georgia, the win against Georgia last year, has that helped this Texas team be mature enough to not put all their eggs in this game's basket and not be so stressed about winning it? I think a younger team might maybe like circle this one and forget about the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think it's helped them in a whole bunch of ways, recruiting, off-season momentum. But more than anything else, Paul, Smoke, I think it's given Texas a strong confidence that's kind of unshaken to this point. I think they you got to get over that hump and beat somebody really good and maybe somebody you're not supposed to. And Georgia was right there on the doorstep of the playoffs. So, you know, say what you want. Georgia didn't care. We kept hearing while we were in New Orleans that they wanted to show the CFP committee they'd made a mistake, and they did not do that. So I think the fact that Texas, if anybody watched that game, that was not a seven-point game. That was a blowout. And Texas was the better team, the more physical team, the better prepared team, and I think that just kind of spilled over into this season.
They obviously lost a lot of people, but everybody does. I mean, the teams that are good eventually somehow overcome that with recruiting and whatever else you do along the way with a depth chart that continues to kind of add together, and Texas and Tom Herman have been trying to do that. But how a little bit nerve-wracking is the story at running back when you have the Whittington kid who is going to be a star and may still be a star, but he's out for an extended amount of time with a sports hernia. Ingram's been banged up at times. Obviously, he's the bell cow. They don't have that transfer like they had a year ago or so, and they have a backup quarterback, although very talented, your running back, and then a linebacker. How kind of a nervous moment is that right now?
I think you're being kind, Smoke, when you say nervous. I think they were devastated by these injuries. To go from five scholarship running backs on the start of fall camp to one healthy scholarship running back, I really wonder if there's another Division I school, Power Five, Group of Five, you know, FCS team or whatever that has one scholarship running back, and he's only a sophomore. And like you said, you know, he had a bone bruise in his knee and sat out about 2 weeks of August camp. So, I mean, for them to have one healthy running back and have the third-string quarterback being the number two guy and having a true freshman linebacker, David Benda, as your number three back, it's just absurd, you know. And it's more than just kind of a curiosity, guys. Which could be a very relevant factor in this game, especially against such a physical defense like LSU.
Well, and Kirk, one of those relevant factors could be the fact that, look, Tom Herman's been pretty successful over the years without really using his running back much. But I know the focus has been not making Sam Ellinger run the ball that much more.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, you know, they don't want to have to depend on Sam and his legs, but they almost have to. And it's one of those, you know, Rubik's Cube kind of thing, you know, what you look at and what you want to see, because that's one of their strengths, and you always have to play to your strength. And Sam's got that physical, bruising, deceptively elusive style. He always seems to get the extra 2 or 3 yards. He's not Vince Young by any stretch of the imagination. He's not going to break one for 60, but he moves the chains. He's great in the red zone, especially inside the five. And I asked him Tuesday, how many design runs did you have against Louisiana Tech? And he said, well, I said zero in the post game, but I looked back at the tape and I had one. Well, I think he might have, 10 or 12, on Saturday night out of necessity.
Yeah, he hits. It's weird because he's not built, and obviously Vince Young can just outrun you. And as big as he was mainly a thoroughbred. RG3 could outrun you, and there are others. He's got more, and I know people have compared him the style of a Tebow until he would hit that level. But that he has the ability, and he's a thick-legged, big kid. We interviewed him at Big 12 Media Days, and he is, there's no question, broad shoulders. How does he avoid, although there's been times he's taken a hit or two and been groggy from it. How does he make himself invisible in all that mess?
I don't know, because you're right. He's a thick guy. He weighs like 230 pounds. I think they list him at 6'3". He's not that tall. He's probably 6'2" or 6'1", something in that neighborhood. But he just, he had this same style at Westlake, and he was hard to bring down, and he was a big part of Todd Dodge's, running attack too. So he's just very comfortable. He's good at dodging people. He's good at avoiding a lot of direct hits. Of course, a lot of times he initiates them himself, and he kind of admits that kind of gets him going. He's kind of an adrenaline junkie in that regard. So as far as the Tebow comparisons, they're similar in that they both have that physical body and that physical running style, and their intangibles are kind of off the chart. They're both such great leaders, but he's so much better passer than Tim Tebow ever was. And, and I don't know if I said it on your show last year or not, I don't think in the 50 years I've been watching Texas I ever saw a quarterback transform himself in one year like that, from a freshman who was kind of scatter-armed and slow in decision-making to the guy who produces, 41 touchdowns passing and running and, went 308 passes without an interception. So it's been a remarkable, journey for Sam, and I think he's only going to get better.
What would it do to the program if they had this 10-4 and wins against Oklahoma, Southern Cal, Georgia, big boy names, tradition, top 5 to 10 names of all time type programs, along with the fact Texas is as well. If, in fact, things were to go south and things didn't go well and they got beat up a little bit on Saturday, Herman and all coaches like to go, it's 1 week and then you clear it and go to the next week. Would that be much of a setback for them? Are they set up, if, in fact, it doesn't go well, to clear it and move on the rest of the way?
Smoke, I think they're set up emotionally because, they got that 1-0 mentality that, we get that coach speak every week from them. But I think it's just kind of a fragile team physically, and we've already talked about the running backs, and, they got 8 different starters on the defensive side of the ball, and their offensive line isn't too deep, not that many people have that. But the running back thing is something that could really kind of haunt them all year long, because with Whittington having groin surgery, and they said out 4 weeks, probably more like 6, can you really count on him at all this year? And would it be smart to just either redshirt him or let him play 3 more games at the end? So, and the game, the team's going to go as Sam goes, guys, that. And if anything happened to him, they'd be really in trouble because, Casey Thompson has now played 1 game and threw, 5 passes last week. So it's just they're really a team that's a year away. And but if they could somehow knock off LSU, and LSU's the favorite, a road favorite, it would do so much for them. And it would probably more important to Texas guys because the Big 12 obviously isn't as strong a conference as the SEC, or at least definitely in perception. So Texas needs this big win if it really wanted to try to get in the playoffs this year.
We're at Richard Carr Motors Buick GMC Cadillac off Imperial Drive. So you have this game and obviously what it means to Texas. And the thing that what has also happened with the new AD and some of the things they're doing around the stadium, Paul and I have been down there to DKR. I've been down there sometimes just to watch the game. I've been down there just to cover the game and experience it. But they have really done an amazing job around the stadium. It's turned into not just a party town, but it's also turned into an atmosphere. Do you sense that now that it's becoming a place that is also difficult to win, not just because of a team's talented, but because there's a home field advantage that's not always been there?
No, absolutely, Smoke. You know, Bevo Boulevard has become kind of a midway, kind of a state fair, mini state fair, if you will. You know, before, you know, you might walk into games at DKR and thinking you're coming to an intellectual debate. You know, it's just there wasn't that buzz, that electricity. And it came back last year for Iowa State, for West Virginia here. And, you know, the team marches down the San Jacinto right next to the stadium with the band. So it's, you know, it's got a long way to go before it's ever a Baton Rouge or Columbus, Ohio or someplace like that. But they're making strides, and you're right. I think it is becoming more of a home field advantage than probably it's ever been. So I would definitely agree with that assessment.
Kirk, how interested are you in the whole Tom Herman was Notre Dame's first choice narrative that was going?
LSU.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, LSU's first choice that was going on here. Because I understand that he was, but it appears to have worked out for both sides even better.
I thought you may have heard something when you mentioned Notre Dame. I was thinking I was going to check my sources. No, I'm writing a column on that for tomorrow's newspaper. And again, I agree with you. It was a win-win situation for both of them, because you look at what Ed Orgeron's doing at LSU. You know, he's won 28 games, and you know, I think he beat like 5 ranked teams last year. And some people would say they were the surprise team of college football. They were knocking on the door of the CFP as well as Georgia was. So, and obviously Texas is happy with Herman. I mean, you know, he's only won 26 games and hadn't won a conference yet. But, you know, to win a Sugar Bowl, you know, against a brand name like Georgia, it's definitely going in the right direction. So, and that's why I think you asked earlier is that, you know, I don't think either one of these programs are going away. You know, both these can sustain a loss. So you don't want to get blown out. You got to be competitive to stay relevant nationally. But, yeah, it was a win-win situation 3 years ago for Texas and LSU. I don't know if either one would change it, quite frankly.
I love, you know, I know A&M Clemson. I love, you know, Auburn and Oregon. I just love these type of games early on in the year. I really do. It gives you an idea. And teams have come back from losing one of them early and still given themselves a chance to be a part of it. Kirk, as always, thank you. Thank you, buddy. Kirk Bowles, Austin American statesman with us on Texas and LSU.